You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings, 12. This is Corbin Smith, your host for Locked On Seahawks. Joining me for our Wednesday episode, my co-host Rob Rang. Now for your lead story here on Locked On Seahawks. With just a handful of training camp practices left, we talked about this some yesterday, the Seahawks love to churn the roster as we draw closer and closer to cutdown day. And they don't look to be finished adding familiar faces. We have seen players like Paul Richardson be re-signed here over the last few days. He originally visited the team with another player that played a long time in Seattle, his fellow 2014 second-round pick, Justin Britt. And Justin Britt, apparently, according to Field Yates of ESPN today, was back in Seattle for another visit and had a workout. To me, that's a really good sign that he is healthy, that they've brought him in now twice, and they are strongly considering making a move to bring back their longtime starting center.
Yeah, I think that it is a very encouraging sign, Corbin. I mean, for anybody who wants, Justin Britt back with the Seahawks, this is exactly what you're looking for. You knew that the Seahawks were going to have to give him some type of a visit, some type of a look, just to kind of kick the tires, so to speak, considering the significant injury that he is coming off of. But then once you got that initial peek out there, you wanted to then follow that up with more of a workout, make sure that he is in shape, make sure that that recovery is going well. And, of course, also to give the current centers and guards on your roster that much more time to recognize that, hey, there's competition right out there that we might be bringing in. So a little bit of a wake-up call, not only to a player like Ethan Postick, who I think that we agree at this point is established himself as the starter at this point, at least, considering the roster the way it is right now, and absolutely a wake-up call to a guy like maybe BJ Finney. But at the same time, it also shows that the Seahawks are very much interested in improving at that position. We've talked so much about what Britt can bring to the field or to this team on the field as well as off of the field. And it's not just him. The Seahawks kicking the tires on another former Seahawk that also makes some sense in Demontre Moore.
Yeah, Moore's a player. When he was with the Seahawks in 2017, he only played in four games. He had seven tackles, two tackles for loss, and half a sack. I actually did a film breakdown. It was one of the first film breakdowns that I had ever done. And I was really impressed by Moore, especially when they played, I believe it was against the Indianapolis Colts. It was that Sunday night game that actually Cliff Avril got hurt in. So Moore played a lot of snaps that night. And I was really impressed with him, not just as a run defender. He had several pressures on Jacoby Brissett in that game as well. Unfortunately, just as the rest of his career has unfolded, he couldn't stay healthy and off-field issues became an issue. I believe he actually had a DUI, and this happened after he suffered a foot injury that was going to rule him out probably for the rest of the season anyway. The Seahawks cut ties with him. He has bounced around with a bunch of different teams, and it's crazy. He's one of those players that you just go, wait, he's only going to be 28 years old on September 11th. It feels like he's been in the league for two decades, bouncing around with a bunch of different teams. And there's never been a question about his talent. And he's had such an odd career path because he had 5.5 sacks his second year in the league with the Giants. It really looked like this kid was coming into his own. And then after that, he kind of hit a wall, a lot of character concerns that were raised. He spent some time in the Alliance of American Football League that didn't last very long. And then he got back into the NFL. He was with the 49ers last year in training camp and impressed during that time. So he's just been all over the place. He's played with a bunch of different teams, but he's still a fairly young player that's got good size. He's always had solid athleticism to go with it and has played both defensive end positions. He's familiar with the Seahawks scheme. And so it makes sense. Looking at these two potential signings, obviously neither player is on the roster as of right now. Field Yates made it sound as if these signings had a really good chance of happening, though. You mentioned the rest of the centers for the Seahawks with Justin Britt. To me, and I've mentioned this before, last week in my 53-man roster projection, I had Justin Britt being one of their centers because I thought he was going to get signed at some point. And I'm going to stick with what I said then. If he is back on the roster and Ethan Posick has been your perceived starter up to this point, this tells me there is very little or no confidence in BJ Finney. If you thought that he was going to maybe be the guy at some point, then I don't think you would be bringing back a player that you cut shortly after the draft like this, despite how well Justin Britt has played. He's coming off that torn ACL, and it screams to me, it's another indictment against what Finney has showed throughout training camp. He's just had a really disappointing first few weeks with the team, and you never want to give up on a guy too quickly, especially given the circumstances. But again, I think it screams no confidence in him. You already know Kyle Fuller suspended the first couple of games as well, and so bringing Brett in just tells me they are not confident, even with Finney being the number two guy at that position. As far as Moore goes, it tells me that Daryl Taylor is nowhere close to returning. I know Pete Carroll has made it sound like maybe there's a chance by, you know, week one, we can at least get him back on the practice field. But I think he's going to end up starting the season on the non-football injury list. And I won't be surprised if we don't see him until the seventh game of the season. And so you need to have depth at that position. That's one reason they brought in Pete T earlier. And that's another reason that they're now looking at bringing in Moore, a player they are very familiar with.
Yeah, they are familiar with him, and everything you just said there, Corbin, makes a lot of sense. I mean, I think that certainly going back to BJ Finney and Justin Britt, center position, I've been one who has argued for Finney a little bit, kind of preached some patience with him a little bit. But at the same time, we've talked about this before. If you look at most of the Seahawks offensive linemen, they have a certain build to them. And, you know, it's just so very different than what you see in the movies, you know, where just about any guy who's 330 pounds, or however that weight is distributed, just make him an offensive lineman in a movie or something. You know, that's not the way that most of these offensive linemen are built. It's truly remarkable when you see some of these guys who are over 300 pounds that have six pack. I mean, that's the type of bodies that these guys have. And yet BJ Finney does not have the most impressive physique along the offensive line. And I'm not saying that that's that important. There's been a lot of really good football players who have not had the traditional frame. Russell Wilson, of course, the quarterback position, if his height being one example of that. But at the same time, Finney not only hasn't physically looked as good, he just, even out there on the playing field, hasn't been very impressive. I still think that there is a chance that he makes this roster. But the fact that the Seahawks have gone back to Britt for a second workout, second visit here in the last couple of weeks, or last week or so, at least reportedly, then I think absolutely that is a condemnation at this point on the signing of Finney, and very much a red flag for him being on this roster moving forward. And with Moore, as you talked about, Texas A&M guy was productive there, had some positional versatility, defensive tackle, defensive end. He's more in that 6'4", 265-pound range, so he's not the easy replacement for Brandon Jackson, also 6'4", 290. But at the same time, King give you a little bit of that ability to slide inside and out. And you talked about the fact that he's bounced around so much in the NFL. His last sack was when he was a member of the Seahawks a couple of years ago. But at the same time, he is a proven commodity, somebody that should be on an NFL roster. And so if you can get him at this point, I think that's something you have to consider.
They're definitely kicking the tires on both players. I think that the Justin Britt news is a far bigger deal, because Moore is going to be, at best, a rotational guy for your defensive line. He gives you some insurance at that position. Justin Britt could come in, and maybe he doesn't start week one because we're only 12 days away from the season opener, but he could easily be back in the starting lineup within the first couple weeks of the season, and then he's going to stay there the rest of the year. And again, it really is a sign that they are not happy with where they're at that center position right now, that you are going back to him right now and you're going to re-sign him. It's just it's a sign of zero confidence, particularly for Finney. I'm really curious to see how this ends up playing out. Do they sign him in quick order? And if they do, is he going to be in a position to compete with Ethan Posick right away? We know he's familiar with the scheme. If anybody can get ready in 11 days to start week one, it's Justin Britt, who has been one of the main cogs in that offensive line for the last 6 years. He's been the one constant that they've had in the trenches. And so he's a guy that would be able to make that quick adjustment. Coming up in the second quarter, Rob and I are going to continue our bubble watch as we approach cutdown day on Saturday. Yesterday, we looked at four offensive players. Today, we're going to look at five defensive players, two of them from the same positional group, who have a ton on the line here in these last couple training camp practices before rosters have to be trimmed to 53 players. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Chain stores have different price tiers for professional mechanics and do-it-yourselfers. Why spend up to twice as much for the same parts? RockAuto.com's prices are the same for everybody and are reliably low. RockAuto.com always offers the lowest prices possible rather than changing prices based on what the market will bear like airlines do. They have everything from engine control modules and brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet. Whether it's for your classic or daily driver, get everything you need in a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. The RockAuto.com catalog is unique, remarkably easy to navigate, and all the parts are available for your vehicle. Choose the brand, specifications, and prices you prefer. Go to RockAuto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Write "locked in their "How did you hear about us" box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. RockAuto.com. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. I'm your host, Corbin Smith. Joining me for our Wednesday show, my co-host, Rob Rang. Later in the third quarter, going to break down some observations from Tuesday's practice. There was a lot going on during the open period that was live streamed, so we actually have quite a bit to chat about on the Seahawks' 16th training camp practice. But first, we're going to continue our bubble watch. We opened this up yesterday with four offensive players that have a ton on the line here over the next couple days trying to make the 53-man roster for the Seahawks. We're going to switch to the other side of the ball now with some defensive players, and I think we've got to start in the trenches. There's been so much talk throughout the offseason about the lack of experience and the lack of depth at that defensive tackle spot behind Jaron Reed and Puna Ford, the projected starters for Seattle. But they actually have a couple young guys that have shown some promise on the practice field and in their mock games. And I think one roster spot right now might be up for grabs between P.J. Johnson, who was recently added to the roster, and undrafted rookie Cedric Lattimore out of Iowa.
Yeah, that's the thing. I think that DeMarcus Christmas, another second-year player out of Florida State, of course, might be very much in that mix as well. But that's I do believe that we're talking about essentially just one spot very likely to be there, because we know that Puna Ford is going to make this team. We know Jaron Reed's going to make this team. I believe that Brian Monet is going to make this team. But that's about it in terms of the interior. So, you know, you're going to have these three other players that definitely have talent in Christmas, in P.J. Johnson, who of course was signed as a free agent just a couple of weeks ago, a really big body guy, 6'3", 335 pounds, has a lot different frame than Christmas, 6'3", 302. And then the undrafted free agent, Cedric Lattimore, out of Iowa this year, also 6'3", 300 pounds. And I think that's going to be fascinating. Lattimore has been name dropped by a couple of different folks, players and coaches alike over the last couple of weeks, Corbin. And you see some flashes of quickness. We've talked about how much that the Seahawks have loved to find players that come from programs with a track record of producing elite talent. Certainly Iowa and Kirk Ferentz has done that. So you know in Lattimore he's going to come in a little bit more technically sound. At the same time, if what you're looking for is beef, is that P.J. Johnson. And 335 pounds, I thought that he moved pretty well in that second mock game. So I think this is going to be a fascinating battle to watch over these next couple of days. And I wouldn't be surprised at all if at least one of these players, if they're not signed by the Seahawks or make the initial roster, if they wind up making the practice squad.
Both these players are pretty athletic for their build. Cedric Lattimore was actually a defensive end early in his career at Iowa. He was 260 pounds as a freshman. So he has played what Seattle would deem as their five tech position. He has played out there before, and you can see that a little bit in the way that he carries himself on the inside. He's now 300 pounds, as you mentioned. He's been playing a lot of snaps as a three tech early stages of training camp, a guy that could maybe play a little bit at the nose tackle position too, but he is on the lighter side to be playing there. But he's got a good, quick first step. In one of the mock scrimmages, he was able to get his hands up and swat away a pass from Russell Wilson too. So you're seeing some things from him as far as athleticism, the ability to be able to collapse the pocket a little bit, has looked pretty solid as a run defender. P.J. Johnson's been really good since they signed him too. And when I asked Pete Carroll about him, that he'd only played in three or four practices, so Carroll didn't have much of an evaluation for me at that point. But this is a big dude at 335 pounds that had 3.5 sacks his last year at Arizona. So for his size, he actually has some pass rushing ability, and he has put that on display in flashes during his couple weeks that he's been with the Seahawks in one-on-ones and during team sessions. And so I really am intrigued by both of these players. It's odd because I think Lattimore is maybe the more sound overall run defender. P.J. Johnson being the bigger body guy that can play nose, he might have a little bit more, at least at this point, of a developed pass rushing game. But certainly both these guys are going to be worth a last look here on that depth chart for that fourth spot at defensive tackle, along with DeMarcus Christmas, who, and we talked about this when Nick Lee was on the show last Friday, he has had a solid training camp, but he hasn't really stood out the way that I was hoping that he would. So he is certainly not guaranteed to make this team, especially with the way that Johnson and Lattimore have looked. Let's go back to linebacker now. We've talked extensively about Ben Burr-Kirvin. Going into training camp, I think you and I were both more pessimistic about his chances to make the team than we are now, because he's had a, by all accounts, a very strong training camp, and he's really made strides and showed the instincts and tackling ability that we knew him well for when he started Washington.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, when he left Washington, he was, just led the nation in tackles. And so you knew that he had that, in his tool belt. And then when he went to the combine and wound up being much, much faster than I thought that he would be, I knew that he was a high school track athlete. I just still didn't think that was going to translate into an impressive 40-yard dash, but it very much did so. The one of the concerns I've always had about him is just strictly size. I mean, he's listed at 6'2", 230 pounds. I was hoping to see bigger thighs, bigger arms, bigger chest kind of a thing. In his second year in the NFL, he is not significantly bigger, but at the same time, those instincts, the reliable tackling ability that you mentioned, those are the things that really do translate well, especially on special teams. And so I think that's where that he has his best opportunity to make this team. I think that he is still very much fighting and scratching and clawing to make this roster, because as it stands right now, I look at Seattle's linebacking core and I don't know if there's another linebacker on this team that I would pick over or that I think that Ben Burr-Kirvin is ahead of at this point. But at the same time, I think that's also just a terrific reflection about the depth and the speed at the linebacker position for this team.
I just think with what he's done in the mock scrimmages, what he has done on the practice field, he's made a lot of plays in the backfield. He showed off his burst and his speed in pursuit, getting after ball carriers on outside runs. He's made some plays in coverage. I think that he has done enough to secure a roster spot. I think with the depth that they've got there, you could always make the argument, well, you're going to end up releasing a good player just because how much talent there is there. I think that they're going to find a way to justify keeping seven players, especially with the fact that Bruce Irvin and Shaquem Griffin are going to get some snaps rushing off the edge in pass rushing situations. They are going to get those opportunities to pin their ears back. So you really only have five true linebackers there, even with Ben Burr-Kirvin, guys that are exclusively going to be playing that position. So I think there's a roster spot for him. But again, you and I have talked about this. He is one of those guys that's kind of on the fringe. He would be on the right side of the bubble here. Let's go to the secondary, a player that I had on the other side of the bubble in my last 53-man roster projection, Nico Thorpe. He's getting to be a little older player. He's had some injuries. I can't break down specifically what he has done in practice the last few times that I've been out there, because a lot of the big plays have happened when the scrimmages and stuff have not been televised, so I can't break down what he's done. But I will say this, Nico Thorpe has looked really good out there when you've had Shaquem Griffin miss a practice, Trey Flowers missed a practice, got a lot more opportunities as a result out there at the left cornerback position as well as the right cornerback position. He's been on both sides, and he's been able to make some plays. This guy is a reliable veteran. We haven't seen much of him on defense because mainly he's been a special teams player, but he has shown the last few days that he is still very capable out there. He's been in the system for a long time. He understands the technique, and he's got enough size that he can play on the outside. And so I think at this point, given his special teams talent, the fact that he's looked pretty darn good out there on the outside, and he's an experienced player that knows this system, knows the techniques, I think that he's probably on the right side of the bubble right now.
You know, it's going to be interesting. He was – Nico Thorpe was a player that I had on my roster when we did our projected rosters here this last week. And I'm struggling with that one because I do believe that Seattle, you know, of course, is always focused in on the younger players. At the same time, again, I do believe that Nico Thorpe is essentially a coach on the field. And I think that is especially important because you're assuming that obviously Jamal Adams is going to wind up being a starter. You believe that Quentin Dunbar is going to wind up being a starter or at least play significant time depending on what happens with Trey Flowers. But either way, you're talking about half of your starting defensive backfield being new and possibly another player, whoever's going to be getting that nickel position as well. So I think that it is very important to just have a coach, not necessarily that he's going to be playing Nico Thorpe, but also just somebody who is experienced, be able to come off from the sideline, be able to have those conversations. We see that happen so much with the quarterbacks because the televisions pan in on the quarterbacks, you know, on the field and all that. But it happens at every other position, as you well know, as a coach yourself, Corbin. So I think that that's important and a factor that is absolutely playing into Nico Thorpe's favor. At the same time, again, 30 years old, it is significant, especially when you have the quality and the depth and the youth that the Seahawks have preferred in the past on the outside. And I do mention the outside specifically because that is where Thorpe is going to be playing at this point. He does not have the agility to be able to play inside at that nickel corner spot. And I don't think that he's going to be able to give you the versatility at the safety position that you might think, given that he is a massive corner. 6'2", 210 pounds is almost the size you expect at the safety, which is going to tie me into one other player I want to mention here in the secondary, and that'd be Ryan Neal, because he also has similar size, 6'3", 200 pounds, a little bit longer, a little bit leaner, and I've seen him also play some corner and safety roles as well for the Seahawks. So I almost wonder if he's the guy that winds up kind of stealing that spot just because, again, the youth, he's only 24 years old, he has similar size, and he has played a couple of different spots for the Seahawks so far.
And he also has special teams value. That's how he got into game action the first couple of years he's been in the league. He spent a lot of time on the practice squad, but he's also been promoted. He has dressed and he's played in NFL games. And so I think that's working in his favor. He's one of the guys that I had on my list that was on the wrong side of the bubble. And the fact that he is continuing to get opportunities, I can't discuss the specifics, but he's been getting opportunities out there that he's been playing safety. He can play corner on the outside. He's a guy that is getting looks on your kick and punt coverage teams. So he is certainly a player that is in the peripheral right now that has an opportunity. And if Seattle is really focusing on youth at this point, then Ryan Neal has a chance to maybe unseat Nico Thorpe. If he's shown that he can pick up the slack on special teams, he's maybe going to have more upside playing on defense if you have to throw him into the lineup, especially with the fact that he gives you more versatility being able to play either safety spot. He's been moved all over the field. And so I think that he has that work in his favor. It's still probably, I wouldn't say it's a long shot. He is definitely in the mix, but it's going to be challenging because of how respected Nico Thorpe is, not just by the coaching staff, but by his teammates. He's one of the glue guys in that locker room. And so I think if it's close, this might be the rare case where they go with the more experienced player rather than the young guy. But we'll see. This is going to be a very fascinating situation as it unfolds. When we come back for the third quarter, it's time to talk Tuesday's practice, the 16th session for the Seahawks in training camp. We only have a couple more of them left. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. It's Wednesday. I'm your host, Corbin Smith, joined by Rob Rang. Yesterday, the Seahawks had their 16th training camp practice. It's pretty crazy that we're already saying that. It feels like we were delayed and delayed and delayed, and then they finally got in the field August 12th, and now here we are. It's already been 16 practices. We are less than 12 days away from the season opener, and it's interesting because you and I both know this from spending a lot of time watching football. You normally can't make a lot of observations from non-padded practices because there's no contact, and this is a contact sport. Usually it's easier to evaluate receivers and corners and skill players, running backs, offensive linemen, players like that. It's much more challenging given the contact limitations that the NFL sets in these non-padded practices. But yesterday was a pretty intense session, and there was a lot going on during the open period. First and foremost, I know there are fans out there that get tired of Pete Carroll every year saying Russell Wilson's the best he has ever been, but can we really argue against that? The guy just continues to find ways to get better. And the one thing that I've really noticed, we started to see this the last couple of years, he has gotten much more effective and proficient in the red zone. He has taken another step forward in that situational football in this training camp. Yesterday was the best that I have ever seen Russell Wilson look in a red zone period at a practice. He had four straight plays with a touchdown pass. And this is what made it so exciting, Rob. All four of those were to four different players, starting with John Ursua and then Penny Hart, Freddie Swain, and then Tyler Lockett, the old standby catching the last one. But four straight passes, he found the end zone, and he was just sizzling yesterday.
That's exciting. I mean, just obviously you have some familiarity with with Tyler Lockett, and you have some familiarity with John Ursua, but to not have a great deal of game action with either Penny Hart or the rookie, of course, Freddie Swain, you know, that is exciting that Russell Wilson is already showing that rapport. You know, we talked about this before with the players that don't have the elite physical attributes. Obviously, we know that Russell Wilson is the height that he is. Well, that height is that much more of an issue when you're in close in the red zone area where all the bodies are compressed into that 20-yard zone. And so I think that it's that much more impressive that Wilson is making these types of strides. And I have to echo what you're saying, what Pete Carroll has said about just how incredible that the Russell Wilson has looked so far. I mean, just some of the caliber of the throws that he was making in the days that I've been there at the mock games or the practices. Truly, you hear Pete Carroll use the word exquisite. That's what it has been. And I've been going to Seahawks practices for 20 years now, it seems like, and seeing a lot of really good quarterback play. But I've not seen anybody throw the ball as well as Russell Wilson has so far throughout this training camp. One of the things that I was interested about is just to hear, how Chris Carson has been doing. We had an opportunity to kind of listen to him here recently in terms of a press conference and he is a player, of course, who we know has been away from the team. I think that it was good to see just how quick in and out of his breaks he was. Now, I think that's important. And Pete Carroll talked about the fresh legs, but I've talked about this before. My biggest concern with Chris Carson is the fact that he is kind of your hammer, and you need him to be a hammer. You don't need him to be just quick. I mean, I want that as well. I think that that's one of the things that makes him a great back is that he can be elusive as well as powerful. But that is going to be definitely one of the big challenges, and so I'm curious to see how if that is going what you've seen from Carson, and any of the other players that have jumped out to you so far.
Well, for me, being the running back guy, when you have a guy like Chris Carson coming off of a cracked hip, that is a significant injury. Obviously, he didn't need surgery, he just needed rest, but I mean, that's still a very significant injury. The number one thing that I wanted to see, and I haven't had much of a chance to see it because even the practices that he has been at the VMAC, he has not been getting a ton of work. They've been easing him back into things. And really, the last couple of days have been the first time that we've really seen extended work from Chris Carson. I wanted to see, does he have his burst back? Does he have his wiggle? Yes, he needs to be your hammer, but that's what I was most concerned about when you're coming off of a hip injury. I wanted to see how he was moving, and he looks very spry. He had one run yesterday during the open team period where, yes, he was playing against guys without pads. They weren't trying to come in and smash him, but still, he was able to make himself narrow, and then he rocketed through a tight crease. And I'm telling you, in a game situation, he might have been gone. There was nothing but grain in front of him. And so I'm very encouraged by what I'm seeing from him as far as his movement, his cutting in the open field, the wiggle that he's displaying. And he is still running downhill. When they're in pads, he's going to be looking to dish punishment. That is always going to be part of Chris Carson's game. But I was most curious to see where he was at athletically. He definitely looks like he's 100% ready. He's going to be good to go in week one. Maybe not for his normal workload, given the fact he's been gone for part of training camp, but he's going to be cutting it close there because he already looks very good. He's in outstanding shape, and he's moving quite well. Speaking of moving well, this is another thing that jumped out because we've talked about Will Dissly. This is a player they've really been cautious with, the number of reps, the workload that he's had coming back from his second major surgery in 2 years, this time an Achilles injury. And I'm going to be honest, Rob, he's kind of been quiet in training camp, and a lot of it has not been his fault. They just haven't given him a ton of opportunities. He's been gradually getting back onto the field, getting his reps. And yesterday, I finally saw the wheels that we saw the first 2 years. He's never been a speedster. I'm not going to mistake that. But, I mean, he moves well for a former converted defensive tackle. And he did it yesterday. He caught a 30-yard pass down the seam. He was moving fluidly. And that got me really excited because we know what this kid can do when he's healthy. And just to see him a second straight year come back from such a devastating injury and be able to bounce right back, this was proof to me that he's going to be able to do it. Now the question is, can you just keep him on the field?
Yeah, that is the question. I mean, that's the thing, is that we've seen, again, what a rapport that Disley already has with Russell Wilson. We know that he's an incredibly savvy route runner for a player, as you mentioned, is former defensive lineman and doesn't have elite speed, but damn, he gets himself open. And, you know, again, just the how accurate Russell Wilson has been, especially on those passes down the seam. And we were talking about Ryan Neal before, and you know, I know one of the plays that stood out to me that actually he was beaten on was a touchdown during the mock game. I believe it was Jacob Hollister up the middle, and Neal was actually in great position. I know that some of the angles I've seen in videos of that touchdown made it appear that he was not, but having been at the game and watched that in person, he was in good position. It's just that Russell Wilson made an incredible throw. And bringing that back to Will Disley, he doesn't have great speed, but he's got those really soft hands. He's a really savvy route runner. He's going to have an absolute superstar in Greg Olsen playing alongside of him, who also is going to be able to attack those seams as well as the receivers. I mean, that's one of the biggest reasons why we haven't seen Will Disley make so many big plays so far, Corbin, is because, you know, Greg Olsen's catching everything in freaking sight, you know, and so I think that's a big part of it. But, you know, again, kind of coming back to Will Disley, that is obviously very, very encouraging news. And something that we all not only are going to be watching because of the competition, just watching because we're just rooting him on.
Let's go to the defensive side of the football. Yesterday, a non-padded practice. This is typical. It was a pretty offensive practice, especially with Russell Wilson throwing touchdowns left and right during that red zone period. But on the defensive side of the football, two players stood out. I'm going to start with Rasheem Green on the defensive line. And I'm going to be honest with you, Rob. I talked Rasheem Green up big time the first week or so of training camp. And then there was kind of a lull. He had a couple nice plays in one of their mock scrimmages. But other than that, he's really kind of gotten quiet. And I'm not going to say that he's played poorly necessarily, but he hasn't jumped out the way that he did during that first week. And yesterday was the best practice that I had seen from him, maybe in training camp. He had a couple really nice plays where he used hand fighting to get off the lineman, and then he knifed his way into the backfield for tackles for loss. So he was the one guy that really stood out on that defensive line. And then, of course, Jamal Adams. I could talk about Jamal Adams after every single practice. The Seahawks have yet to show that they can block him when he blitzes. And it's just, he is so good at timing up his blitz off the edge. And that's one of the things that makes him so special and such a unique talent at that position. You know, Pete Carroll is just licking his lips because he's never had a safety that could blitz like that. And so it's just going to add a different wrinkle to this defense. But that particular sack that he would have had yesterday, they blew the play dead when the snap hit Russell Wilson's hand, because Adams was already back there. That's how fast it looked like he got shot out of a cannon off the edge. And I know they were a non-padded practice and, you know, guys aren't able to block full, whatever, but it wouldn't have mattered there. The way that he got his jump and got in the backfield, whoever's playing quarterback is going to be devoured because he was right there when the snap hit Wilson's hands. It was just remarkable to watch.
Yeah, I mean, Adams, as you said, I mean, we can pretty much just gush about this guy just about every time he's on the field. I mean, just because he's a playmaker. I mean, his speed, his intensity, his anticipation. I mean, it's
the celebrations after the play.
Exactly. For his defensive teammates as well as for the offensive guy. That's one of the, I mean, he's competitive as all heck, but at the same time, he acknowledges great plays when they happen. It makes him better. And I think that's unusual. And it's one of the reasons why obviously the Seahawks decided to go out and get him. You know, and Rasheem Green, I mean, you certainly were not alone. I mean, I've been touting this player as a guy who was going to kind of, you know, come into the NFL. He was going to be really young and would need a little bit of time, but this is his time. This is his opportunity. opportunity. Clearly the Seahawks are expecting big things out of him. Otherwise, I'm sure that they would have tried to allocate more funds, more draft picks, more whatever, into defensive linemen who are going to be able to make an immediate impact. They are absolutely expecting for Rasheem Green to take that next step, for LJ Collier on the same time to take that next step. And neither one of those two players have I seen a lot of big plays from throughout training camp and throughout the mock game. At the same time, I haven't seen a lot of big plays from Puna Ford or from Jaron Reed at this point either. And I feel very, very confident in those two guys. And so that's really my point, Corbin, is that I think that what we're seeing, at least what I've seen, is that there has been such a focus on when you're throwing the ball, you get the ball out of your hands very, very quickly. I think that's something that they've absolutely got into Russell Wilson's head and Geno Smith's head and all the other quarterbacks. Get the ball out of your hands. Bad things are going to happen. And I think that's been a focus. And that it is kind of robbing the defensive linemen from their opportunities. And so I do think that once we actually get into the game settings, I think that you are going to see some splashy plays, especially from Rasheem Green, who I do anticipate being really Seattle's breakout defensive lineman this year.
Make sure to follow me on Twitter at Corbin Smith NFL. You can follow Rob at Rob Rang. Subscribe to our show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, whatever your preferred podcast platform is. Go to our website, LockedOnSeahawks.com. Coming up on our Thursday show, we are reaching the end of training camp cutdown day just a few days away. We'll share our last four in and last four out on the Seahawks 53-man roster on the offensive side of the football. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday. Go Hawks.